All right, here we are. We're looking, continuing on this trip through the law, giving in Exodus chapter 21, 22, and 23. Right now, we're coming up to some of the laws regarding compensation for personal injury and property. We're going to begin at Exodus 21, verse 18. Nate Wagner, read it for us.
If a man contend with each other, and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, and he does not die, but is confined to his bed, if he rises again and walks about outside with his staff, then he who struck him shall be acquitted. He shall only pay for the loss of his time, and shall provide for him to be thoroughly healed.
Personal injury law, right here in the scriptures. Isn't that remarkable?
A little workers' comp right here.
Yeah. Now, I wish I could say that these laws were completely unique among it, but they're really not. If you go to other ancient cultures, the Hittites, the Code of Hammurabi, such like that, you'll find some similar laws in this situation because they knew that, look, if, I mean, to speak in a colloquial way, if you jack a dude up, you gotta compensate him.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just walk away from it like nothing happened. So verse 18, if men contend with each other and one strikes the other, if he's confined to his bed, if he's unable to work because of this injury, well, then what happens? The one who did the injury, he has to pay some kind of compensation.
Now, would that be if it was worker to worker, or was it master to worker? I was
no,
kind
this
of
doesn't
wondering
really
about
have
the...
in mind master to worker here.
Okay.
These are just two people. Now, I'm not saying that the principle doesn't have application
sure.
to a master and a worker, but that's kind of dealt with in other places. Here, you're just talking about a couple of guys.
But it was still the responsibility of the master to, when it says, pay for the loss of his time?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Now,
but it wouldn't be the worker. It would be the master.
No, well, it... In that situation, but that's not what's being talked about. These are just two guys.
Right.
Two guys. So it would be more like the perpetrator had to pay the victim.
Okay.
You know, and compensate him.
Gotcha.
You're not so much talking about master slave.
But you're thinking, what if it was two slaves of the same master?
Well, then, I don't know. Then the master would have to figure that one out himself.
Yeah.
Now, what you're saying here, it really leads something. We understand that... these laws of Moses were not meant to cover every hypothetical situation.
Right.
These were principles. This was case law given to the judges of Israel so that they could figure out things along the way. And so they might take the principles from these different laws and apply them to situations that aren't specifically mentioned here.
I like this one. It really talks about God's desire to provide.
Yes.
You know, even if the man cannot work, he's still to be provided for. For the loss of the time, he's still to be compensated for that. And
that's right.
It just speaks of God's faithfulness and his provision.
But if he could work, he wasn't to milk the system.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever appropriate damages should be paid, but then go and get back to work. But you're right. God wanted that person who was the legitimate victim in such a situation. He should be compensated. I suppose that our idea of personal injury and compensation and such like that is based on these same basic principles. And we see it from way back in the laws of Israel. All right, let's go right into the next section that has to do with the master-slave relationship, right? So here we're talking about a different law sort of regarding the beating and the death of a servant. Mr. Wally, why don't you read that?
It says, and if a man beats his male or female servant with a rod, so that he dies under his hand, he shall surely be punished. Notwithstanding, if he remains alive a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his property.
You know, this is wonderful and complicated all at the same time. The first thing I want you to notice is that the master would be punished for killing his servant. He wasn't his property, he was a person. And he was obligated to respect his rights as a person. In some other ancient cultures, they held a master to have complete power over a slave, and if a master killed a slave, so what? It's his property. You know, just like a master could throw away an axe if he was done using it, he could throw away a slave and murder him if he was done using the slave. Not so in ancient Israel. He was regarded as a person.
Once again, we see this elevated status that this law, God's standard, bringing to mankind.
Right, elevated, but still, look, I mean, none of us would want to change places because look at it here in verse 21 where it says, notwithstanding, if he remains alive a day or two, he shall not be punished. Now, I mean, look, here we can see a couple of things. Number one is that the idea is that the law is trying to discern the intent of the master. And the idea being If the slave didn't die immediately, it would be evidence that the master's intent was not to murder the slave. Maybe the master just beat the slave, but did it far more than he should, and the master therefore should be punished in some way, but should not be found guilty of murder. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of that distinction right there. But I gotta say, there is a tremendous principle here that is reflected in the law of Moses, and that is, it gives great consideration to the rights of the accused. Mm-hmm. Now, to be honest, we find it hard to find sympathy here, you know, because the right. accused here is a master who beat his slave, and he should be guilty no matter what, you know, mm-hmm. throw the book at him. Right. Mm-hmm. But actually, the Mosaic law isn't that way. It says, no. If the man is guilty, let's be careful and charge him for the crime that he's actually guilty of. And if the intent of his actions was not to murder, if this wasn't murder one, so to speak, then let's not charge him with it. Mm-hmm. And we see that respect for the rights of the accused mm-hmm. in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Really seems as though the aim of this law was not to place a slave at the master's mercy, but to restrict the master's power over him.
That's right. And these were the seeds that eventually resulted not only in the humanization of any institution of servitude within ancient Israel, but also sowed the seeds for its eventual demise, yeah. as happened by the hand of Christians, right? Mm. It wasn't atheists who brushed aside slavery. It wasn't people from other of the great faiths of this world. It was Christians who were the abolitionists and who got rid of slavery.
But even in that humanization of slaves and slavery, you still see it there, that he is his property.
At the end of verse 21, yeah, right? There's kind of the problem or the uncomfortable thing in this. Yeah. It says, he shall surely be punished. He is his property. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a picture of the idea. The servant was a person who could mm-hmm. be murdered, but he was also considered the property of the master mm-hmm. until the obligation was fulfilled. Both were true. The servant was not pure property, but neither was he a free person. Mm-hmm. And I think that the essence of the property idea was that the master had an obligation, or no, that's not the right word, a financial interest in the servant. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's get it down to the hypothetical on how this might really happen in ancient Israel. Nate, let's just say you owe David Wally here a debt. It could happen, I guess.
Yeah,
you possibly, owe David, yeah. You never know. Let's say you owe him, you know, $10,000 right. or something. You can't pay it. So under the laws and customs of ancient Israel, you would be in servitude to him mm. until the value of that debt would be paid off. Well, let's say that, you know, gosh, this is getting a little crazy.
That's okay.
But let's say something happened yes. and you were so injured that you were unable to fulfill your obligation. Right. That would be a loss of his financial interest in you. Mm-hmm. Whatever debt you owed was now gone. Mm-hmm. And so it gave an incentive for him to treat you well so that his financial interest could be repaid to him mm-hmm. and that the debt could be settled properly instead of just disappear in some bizarre right. beating or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So here we see it. The slave was not a free man. No. His master had a financial interest, but neither was he non-human. He was a person and property all at the same time. But wouldn't you say, here's sort of an analogy, all right? Does not Jesus have an interest in his people? Mm. Are we not his purchased possession?
Yeah.
Has he not purchased us, body, soul, and spirit? We belong to him. Yeah. For you are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body, which belongs to God. And that's really sort of our interest. We should read this and say, okay, Lord, you're my master. I'm bought. I'm your property.
Yeah.
I'm bought with your price. And bought with a price that's far more precious than a gold or silver.
The precious blood.
That's right. All right, well, good. Let's pause here and we'll...